Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special bonus content interview for week three of the FTC Roundtable for the month of June. My name is Toni Mantich, and I've been curating the roundtable this month, and our theme has been leadership and teams. And we've been talking about those in broad terms, both leadership and teams, and one of the things we've been focusing on is how teams are changing today. And one of the key ways in which teams are changing is that they're becoming more and more globally distributed. So today we're lucky in that we have two guests that are going to talk to us a bit about leading and participating on teams that are globally distributed. So I'm very fortunate that I get to work on a daily basis with the two guests today as part of the organization I lead at ServiceNow. That group is called Product Content, and it's a group of about 90 that's globally distributed that's responsible for doing all of our content, supporting our products at ServiceNow, all of our product content and documentation. It's a group of about 90 that's globally distributed, so we have folks in the United States, primarily in two locations in California, as well as in the Seattle area, but we have a number of folks who are remote in within the United States as well. And then we've got folks in Australia, in Amsterdam, in Tel Aviv, Israel, and in Hyderabad. And so our guest today, we have Lisa Holtman, who's a director in at ServiceNow. And she has lots of experience leading international teams. And she's coming to us today for an interview from San Diego, where she's based. And we also have on the phone Suresh Kumar, who is a senior manager and is based in Hyderabad. And so he's our manager on the ground at that location. And so we're really excited to get perspectives. Both Lisa and Suresh have managed international teams at ServiceNow, but also other organizations as well, and look forward to hearing their perspectives.
Welcome, Lisa and Suresh. Thanks so much for being a part of this. And I wanted to start the conversation with just getting your sense of we know that there are a lot of challenges with working across time zones internationally, but there are also a lot of benefits that come with that. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what are some of the things that that you see as real benefits and you're excited about with working with international teams.
Sure, happy to answer that, Toni. Thank you for having us. So I've been working with an international organization for several years, and one of the things I enjoy most is just really getting to know people in other parts of the world. Can't necessarily travel there personally all the time, and so getting to build working relationships with people in other cultures has been personally very valuable to me, and something that motivates me in the work environment. And so I have found that to be personally really satisfying. From a business perspective, gives us a chance to have people who are kind of around the clock. So if something happens in a time zone or even over the weekend, we have coworkers who are starting their work week earlier than us in the US. And on the other side, we're finishing up the work week later in the week for them, and we're able to take care of things that might have already moved into their weekend. So just having that more coverage throughout the work week is also something else that just proves really valuable.
Great. Suresh, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Yes. Thank you for having us, Toni. I think the list of benefits of having an international team is great, endless. Apart from the most important ones like diverse talent, enhanced productivity, rich culture, balanced cost to the company, I think one of the most important benefits I see in my team is creativity. A team that has a diverse background will inevitably have a broader range of experience and ideas to bring in. We get creative input for product features, content creation, or even how to tackle a business problem sometimes. My international team members offer a completely different perspective for solving problems. They will see what is working for them in their part of the world, and sometimes the same approach really works well for a global team. And I think adapting ideas that work elsewhere can be an invaluable kind of innovation. So for me, creativity that comes from an international team is in a way an asset to a company.
Yeah, I agree. And we're very fortunate in our organization that we've got a lot of geographic diversity to take advantage of that. So let's turn a little bit to kind of the how, things that we can do to make our global teams more successful. And so I think most people who think about or have been part of global team realize that it's important to understand the customs, different customs and different language nuances and social habits for each of the areas you have teammates in. But I'm wondering if you could talk about how, you know, what's a good way to educate oneself on those things so that we can be sensitive to those and can learn to work more cohesively?
That's a great question, Tony. In a global business world, there are some serious challenges when we communicate with other nationalities, right? You know, the first thing people think of when they work with other nationalities is, let's look at other culture. Well, I tell people, look at yourself, because it's all about perception and understanding what people see. So out of many cultural dimensions that impact cross-communication working relationship, I encourage people to spend more energy on cultural dimensions like communicating, trusting, and leading, right? These are very important cultural distinctions. For example, in India, communication is a high-context culture. Good communication is sophisticated, nuanced, and it's more layered. Messages are both spoken and read between the lines, right? Messages are often implied, not plainly expressed. So to bridge the gap from a low-context culture, it's very important not to assume the messages are contained in spoken words. I pay as much as attention to what is not said as to what is actually said. An Indian person will often find it very difficult to say a straight no, maybe because they are often they're afraid of losing face of oneself or even sometimes the face of others. We need to learn to read between the lines and to study the body language. And answers like "we will try," "maybe," or even "I will let you know later," they usually mean no. So it's very important to be aware of these cultural differences. Another big thing is trusting. In countries like India and China, and even in Japan, trust is relationship-based. Trust is built through sharing meals, evening drinks, and visits at the coffee machines. Work relationship is built up over the long term, where in some cultures, trust is built through business and task-related activities. So to build trust in a relationship-based culture, I recommend people, I tell people, okay, show up your true integrated self to those people. Don't get down to business until a caring connection is established, right? And empathy is created between both the parties, both the employees. Offer explanations when asking for details. Build on a common interest. We are not saying any culture is right or wrong, but we should understand it. We should celebrate the difference and accept the positive elements. I tell people, when you have different cultures in the same team or in the same person, extend your border. Then we can actually create a global mindset. That's why a cultural awareness is very important in a team.
Right, Lisa, would you like to add on?
Sure. So I agree with everything Suresh just said. Those were great points. Thank you so much. I always do try to start my one-on-one meetings just finding out how folks are doing along Suresh's points, kind of building that relationship, getting to know them, showing a personal interest. It's a true thing for me, but it's also just something that I make a point of doing at the start of any one-on-one or any meeting really where it's appropriate. spend a few minutes getting to know that person and see how they're doing. Some other things that I have done personally to try to just kind of learn and understand another culture that I might not be familiar with. I get online. I do a lot of Google searching. I have gone and looked for local news and read up and understood what's happening in a culture, what the current affairs are. It also helps me in asking questions and showing an interest, a genuine interest in what's affecting folks in another part of the world, what's going on in their life. And so I like to take time to do that and just make sure I'm kind of on top of current events and just kind of what's going on in their world. And I also like to ask questions. I'm not shy in asking, you know, what is kind of the and I don't ask political specifics, but I like to just kind of understand. You know, we hear in the U.S. about national elections in India, for example. And so I'm always kind of curious, what does that mean? How does that work? You know, what do you actually have to do to go vote? Why is it a holiday for you? It's not in the U.S. You know, I like to have those kinds of conversations and understand what that means. Same for any culture, same in Israel, some of our coworkers in Amsterdam. Those are common things that you can kind of carry to any other country that you're not familiar with. I've also been fortunate in past companies that training was provided for us. So once we started building more working relationships with coworkers and colleagues in other parts of the globe, my company actually provided some training to kind of help us understand how that culture might be a little bit different than ours and get you thinking in a different way. And so I've been fortunate enough to have some of that happen in the past also.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I've enjoyed at ServiceNow, we've got an internal social network and we've got different channels for our different geographic locations. And I've enjoyed, that's a place where we can get news about some of the holidays that are happening or some of the religious observances that might be different. And so that's another channel we have for educating ourselves, getting and that information's coming from our, you know, our teammates in other countries. Yeah. So if we move ahead and kind of take that that knowledge that we're getting as we're educating ourselves about these other cultures, how can we build on that to make sure that we're being really inclusive, like globally inclusive? What kinds of things can we do?
So I think it all starts with respect. I think understanding why somebody may be asking for additional time off or some sort of special accommodation around maybe needing to work from home for some sort of situation, whatever you can do to be supportive based on what situation is occurring is one way to make sure you're being inclusive. We also try to... we maintain a calendar that lists all of our global holidays so that we can schedule projects and large initiatives with some insight into when people are going to be in the office, not in the office, and do our best to kind of work around that and not assume that it's all about the U.S. You know, we need to be the same with everybody. The other thing that I'm get kind of blunt, you know, if I don't understand somebody's accent or a phrase that they may have used that I'm not familiar with, I just ask. And I ask people to do the same of me. I also constantly tell people, please correct me if I'm pronouncing things wrong, especially somebody's name. Names are very personal, our most personal thing. And I really don't like mispronouncing names. So I'm constantly asking people, you know, can you say that again? Help me make sure I'm pronouncing it correctly. So I encourage others, you know, if they're willing to have me help correct some of their things, I'm willing to do that. But I definitely want people to help me make sure that I'm being respectful and pronouncing things correctly, especially names.
Great. Suresh, do you have any other thoughts on, you know, some examples or some practical things that we can do to be inclusive?
Yes, Tony. You know, time zone is a big thing. We should be aware of time zones. You know, there are social norms that we need to be aware of when we work with people from different cultures. We need to be aware of language expressions and some holidays, local holidays, like Lisa said. labor laws, you know, business related laws, ethics related expectations, and some practices, you know, personal and privacy laws. In some places, how holidays and vacations are planned are different from some other places. We need to be very careful about how we deal with our employees and, you know, other stakeholders.
Great, thanks. So let's go, just we keep honing down and getting a little more specific. So I know that one area where there can be some key differences are in kind of what the right level of formality is, or what's considered polite. And there are differences in conversational styles in different cultures. So I'm wondering if you, each of you could give some examples from the specific teams and nationalities you work with of what some of those differences are.
Yeah, you know, if I'm too direct when I speak, I can come across as aggressive, and, you know, that might put off people. And the thing I find a bit strange is when politeness expectations are put on people from another culture without taking into consideration that they are actually from a different or another culture, right? Things might be different there. You know, if a person from another country doesn't like, you know, litter their speech with pleasantries, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are being rude or impolite. Mm-hmm. And assuming is so unreasonable and sometimes unfair. You know, it creates a lot of confusions. Now, for example, in some countries like US and UK, people like to say thank you, please, you're welcome, you know, to friends and families. In India, we don't use pleasantries for friends and families. It's not that we are cold or rude, but we like to do something for them, you know, because our actions are more powerful than words. We like to do. We like to go and get things done for people. It is expected. It is not that we are doing out of, you know, our free. We are doing it out of free will. It's not that we are doing favors to people, right? So we like to show that we care, but we just don't say it. So, but however, in a working relationship, this might appear a bit rude and, you know, unprofessional. So this is the reason why we need a common business and a professional culture where we have a common expectations to respect people and be polite to them. Put across statements in such a way they don't get offended, you know. Try to be not to be too direct. When we speak, we can be a little subtle and put ourselves into people's mind and make that connection person to person, be compassionate and, you know, create empathy in our conversation. Even we mean certain things very direct, and we expect outcome immediately, we could still be compassionate. And that's where the politeness comes from.
Yep. And on the other side, we that are in the US, that we are a little bit more accustomed to that and sort of could get our feathers a little ruffled if we feel like people are being a little blunter than we're used to. It serves us well to remember also that it is a different culture. And it's not uncommon to hear U.S. Employees talking to each other and reminding them that, oh yeah, you know, in Israel, they're just a little blunter than we're used to. That's okay. It's not personal. And the same in our Amsterdam office, the Dutch culture can be a little more factual and straight to the point than some of us might be in the U.S. We usually get there, but sometimes we take a little bit longer to get to our point. So on our side, we need to do the same. We need to remember that it's not personal, and we need to focus on the message and the true meaning behind it. So it's give and take on both sides to make sure we're communicating correctly and effectively.
Yeah, I made my first trip to India this January, and so I was doing my best to get it educated. I've had teams in India and worked with people in India, but I hadn't been before, and so I'll admit I was I tried to do my due diligence, right? Like, because I wanted to make sure that I was aware of things that would come up in person, right? And how best to handle them. But I think, you know, for me, kind of an undercurrent to what both of you are saying that is that you don't necessarily have to get it all right, right? Like, I don't think it's realistic to expect people from a mix of cultures to assume the other culture and somehow kind of blend into the other culture. It's about respect. And I think one of the things that sticks out for me to the comments you guys are both making is that it's about respecting, but you don't have to master it. It's just, to me, it's partly about giving the benefit of the doubt. If something feels odd for some reason, if something feels like it's, you know, more blunt than we're accustomed to or something else, to just kind of give the benefit of the doubt that that's part of the cultural difference and see it as a learning opportunity, but also to not, you know, feel like there's a burden that you have to somehow kind of achieve, you know, blend in exactly with that, right? Because I think that's where the questions, you know, asking questions and coming to understand is really helpful. I'm wondering, I know that one area that we talked a little bit about pleasantries, as Suresh said, but I know that there's also kind of a difference around maybe it's kind of where the privacy boundary is or the kind of personal professional boundary or how people express feelings and empathy and those kinds of things at work. And I know that that's the thing that has some cultural nuances. So I'm wondering if you could comment on that.
So for me, you know, empathy should help us rise above our prescribed professional roles, you know, so we can connect person to person. You know, especially leaders need to read between the lines of what is said, and you know, this makes them especially good at our understanding and supporting group dynamics, right? That doesn't mean that we are trying to please everybody, because that's not even possible sometimes. But it means we should consider other people's feeling when making decisions. That's what I mean, right? This in turn helps team work, global business talent management, bringing in the culture together, people feeling free about voicing their opinion. So in that aspect, it's very useful. You know, empathy gives our communication more compassion. That's what I think many a times. Most of the times we say what we want to say. We don't think how it might land and connect with the person we are talking to. Our facial expression, nonverbal, everything we say should feel like real, authentic, and connect with the feelings of the other person. That's where the empathy comes from. We need to find ways to celebrate and for example, with people we work remotely, we need to find ways to celebrate and socialize remotely. You know, that strengthens the relationship between team members and it improves collaboration. You know, that's one of the biggest challenges I see as a remote team, right? So when you have a one-on-one connection with your employee, you need to show that you feel for them. Most of the times we straight away get into business without asking, you know, how are you? How are things going on? Sometimes we even talk about how's your family doing? You know, it's not that you need to remember the names of each of Indian managers or employees' child, but there's nothing wrong in spending some time to ask how are things, you know. At least we should remember how many kids your employees have persons who are working remotely, right? So empathy is really important, understanding the emotions and feelings of the others, because it really helps in running the business very smoothly, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, do you have anything to add?
No, I think Suresh got everything I was thinking of in that area.
Lisa, is there anything that, in your experience, you would recommend avoiding in conversations with global teams?
Sure. So I think it's actually the same as it is here in the U.S. You should stay away from any conversations that an employee has expressed a desire for, you know, kind of a personal work boundary. Typically, things like deep religious conversations, I am not looking to persuade somebody on anything, or I would kind of avoid, you know, personal religious conversations, political opinions, getting into, you know, a person's particular political perspective, I would stay away from those. It's really the same professional boundaries that I would have here in the U.S. I don't see anything different from that perspective.
Yeah, that's been my experience as well. If we switch gears for a minute to a little bit more to the logistics of leading teams, right? One of the big challenges, of course, we talked a little bit about the benefits of time zones, but time zones also bring some challenges if you've got people on one team spread across the globe. And there's, you know, distance as well, so that you are less likely to have, you know, in-person meetings and those kinds of things. So could you give some tips about how you, as managers in particular, how you deal with some of those logistics?
Yes. So my perception about remote employees is that they enjoy their work more, and they are even more productive. So to make it even better, we focus on some key shifts and changes in our team. For example, in my team, we take a remote first approach. For instance, because people on a conference call may have a hard time being heard, we give them explicit permissions to interrupt. We set that context very well at the beginning of the beginning of every meeting, or even make it a point to taking questions from remote employees first, right? And from the task point of view, we focus on results, not tasks, for remote employees especially. We set expectations for output early in our conversations and reinforce them very often. We focus on what each team member actually delivers, not on where, how, and even when they work. That puts remote team members on the same footing as those in the home office or workplace. So we really embrace technology. We have collaboration technologies that are very simple, reliable, and accessible very easily. We do create some virtual water cooler type conversation for our remote team members. That provides opportunities for team members to socialize online and have some fun chats. I especially keep tabs on the conversations that happen in these channels. I pay close attention to team communication channels, as we need to be constantly adjusting, coordinating, clarifying, and helping avoid misunderstandings. And I also meet in person whenever necessary. Wherever possible, I don't forget the importance of occasional face-to-face meetings for building and maintaining relationships. So just to summarize, set clear expectations, treat remote as local, engage regularly, schedule video-based coaching, conferencing. The most important thing, trust your team, make it feel inclusive, stay focused on goals, not activity or tasks, be very intentional, create a communication strategy, establish close bonds, help them, support them frequently.
Those are great. I have just a couple more to add into that. So I already mentioned that, you know, we try to make sure we're really aware of all of the different holidays. So we do maintain a group calendar. I'll reiterate, Suresh mentioned using video on calls. Video is, to me, almost a requirement when we have one-on-one calls with people in another country. Even staff meeting calls where some people, if it's possible to have everybody have a camera and a webcam on and just really have that face-to-face feel, even though you're, you know, halfway around the world, I think that's just super valuable. Another thing that we really do try to, and this one's hard, we've definitely not perfected it yet, but trying to carve out projects and initiatives that teams in other locations can kind of own and run with. And so to make sure that there's equal distribution of work and that there's no sense of favoritism in one location over another, especially for those closer to our headquarters. I think that often lends itself to some people feeling like all the fun work or all the special work is happening there. So really making a concerted effort to see what's feasible to be done in a remote location and have others own those sorts of tasks and be equally contributing to the success of the department is critical. And it takes effort to make sure that you're doing that. The other thing we do, and this goes back to respect, compromise on who's making the early morning or late evening calls, right? It should be, in my mind, it's 50-50. And if you've got more people in one location and a couple in another, then majority rules. And, you know, go with the bigger group and the others can make exceptions. We're very lucky in our company that it works that way pretty easily. Most people are happy to jump on a late night call to accommodate another part of the company in another part of the world or vice versa. So, but don't be selfish, compromise on that. You know, everybody's giving to make the business a success. And then you can do things like, you know, I tell my team if it's not my normal work day or work hours, feel free to reach out to me on some sort of text app that I might have on my cell phone, that I would have on my cell phone. WhatsApp is an example of that. There's lots of other ones out there, but you know, I make myself available. I know I won't necessarily be checking email, but feel free to send me a text message if there's something really urgent that needs my attention, and I'm more than happy to respond as soon as I can. So making yourself available, being aware of those time zones, and just being respectful for give and take on your evenings or your early mornings so that everybody has kind of equal impact to the normal traditional sort of workday schedule that it takes to maintain these relationships.
Yeah, I really agree with everything both of you have said. And there's another bonus interview recording with Joe Panaccio of Qualcomm. And one of the things he talked about was equality, right? Having equality of opportunity that you mentioned, Lisa. And I think it's not just about opportunity to work on special projects and those kinds of things, although that's huge. It's also about having, making sure that we're providing the same types of training and other types of activities as well. So, and I know that budgets, travel budgets can make things a challenge in terms of, for example, flying people to other countries to do training or flying people from remote countries to headquarter countries and those kinds of things. But there are, you know, creative ways to do that. So, you know, one of the challenges we're facing in our organization is that we used to be able to fly everybody in every once in a while to do some training. And as the organization grows, that costs are going to get prohibitive, but we want to find a way to do regional events or something so that we are getting parity in terms of opportunity as well as training and you know, just other benefits as well. So, and then, you know, I'll just also reiterate that I certainly agree about the video and about the accommodating with the times. And then, you know, it's just also important to try to get those real face-to-face meetings when you can, right? So I think as managers, it's important to get to those remote locations as often as your travel budget will allow it to have that in person when we can. So, but let's change gears for a minute. You know, we talked at the beginning, we kind of started with a lot of culture questions about how to educate, no matter which location you're in, how to get educated about other cultures and how to be inclusive regardless of where you are, or what your role is. And then we talked a little bit about as managers, what are some of the things we can do help teams work internationally in a more cohesive way and some of the logistics. But I wanted to end by thinking about some tips we could give to individual contributors, right? Any employee who's working, particularly those who are working at in a geographic location that's remote from kind of the center of gravity. That might be the headquarters, or it might be the place where the majority of your department is, even if it's not headquarters. So for those people who are working and maybe, you know, on a different continent or separated by an ocean, from a place where that's central for some reason. What kinds of tips do we have for them about how those individuals can increase their visibility or make sure that they feel fully engaged in kind of the mothership, as it were, wherever that mothership might be?
Yeah, employees who are in international locations, we need to make sure that they should be very self-motivated. When we say self-motivated, they must be driven by, you know, results should drive them. They should be open and honest. They should come to their local managers, a point of contact for suggestions, for open feedback and other helps, right? There would be people to prioritize their purpose in their work. So they need to be clear on expectations. They need to make sure they understand what is expected from them and take the initiatives instead of just waiting for their managers or their other point of contacts to reach out to them. They need to communicate the progress. You know, they should make it easy for others to see their progress on agreed upon tasks. You know, have regularly scheduled online meetings. If they're working on a project with other team members, it's important to have regularly scheduled meetings. That creates opportunities to talk with team members about team, the pending tasks that would otherwise come up in a later stage. And it should be very much outcome based. The feedback should be very open and honest, and it should be mutual with the managers and the employees working at remote places.
Lisa, any thoughts?
Yeah, I have just one more little tip that I try to encourage folks in remote locations. So it's not uncommon for us to have all hands meetings, large team meetings that aren't necessarily conducive to an international location attending live. So I encourage those in international offices to get together and watch the recording. You know, for those of us in the US, we're taking a couple hours out of our day to watch it. So I suggest they do the same and get in a conference room all together and share in that experience. They have a chance to, you know, they can pause the recording and discuss what they've just heard as a group. And I think that helps sort of recreate that team meeting environment. It also kind of forces you to watch the recording. It's so easy these days to just keep moving with our really busy schedules and not catch up on some of those meetings. So that's just one little tip that I have that I try to reinforce and encourage folks in remote locations to sort of feel that inclusion that they might not normally. But yeah, Suresh, all of Suresh's other ideas, complete in agreement with.
Yeah, another one more thing I would like to add is they should make use of their skip level interactions, right? Mm-hmm. They have local managers, local point of contacts, leadership. You know, they should be open enough to go beyond the local point of contacts, and they should feel confident and comfortable enough to make use of the skip level mentoring, skip level advice and support for their work and, you know, their career aspirations and growth.
Yeah, I think that's so important too, right? Because that kind of brings us full circle back to, we started with talking a little bit about some of the benefits of having international teams. And one of the key ones is having a diversity of perspectives and experiences. And so, it's really important to make sure if you're in a remote location, if you're internationally, if you're on the international side from wherever the center of gravity is, to make sure that your voice is heard, right? So certainly managers and others should be soliciting that, but it's responsibility and opportunity of every individual to make that voice heard. So being willing to reach out, as you said, to going beyond the local points of contact. And we can marry that, I think, with what Lisa was just saying about, if the all hands meeting is not at a time that's convenient locally, get together with your peers in your local office and watch it, and then feed some of the feedback from having watched it together back into the conversation, right? So that you're becoming part, you know, you're injecting yourself back into that ongoing conversation about what happened in that meeting, and or you know, what's going on in the organization. So, and there are lots of ways to do that, right? Which, you know, skip levels that Suresh mentioned, or if you've got internal social channels or Slack or you know, whatever your, you know, departmental kind of communication tools are to kind of extend the conversation. Because that's one of the challenges, right? Is if you do watch the recording later, or sometimes an organization might have two versions of a meeting, right? Have one for some time zones and another. And I think as leaders and individual contributors, we want to work really hard to bring those two conversations together, right? So that we're not having two separate conversations. We want to bring that feedback so that it becomes an ongoing conversation that really takes advantage of the entire kind of multinational, international perspective. So any parting thoughts that either of you would like to offer around international teams?
So one of the challenges I see in the international teams is how you manage the performance of the employees, right? Mm-hmm. I've observed that, you know, for example, a common business challenge in India is the hierarchical organization structures. This cultural phenomena results in a high individual achievement drive and lack of emphasis on performing well in teams sometimes, not all of them. The issue of hierarchy presents itself when everybody, you know, strives for individual performance over collaboration and, you know, team-based performance. You know, the goal is not for a team success, but in seeking individual recognition, right? In hierarchical organizations, you know, levels of power, authority and prestige are sometimes subtle but very real. You know, it exists. You cannot wish it away. But I strongly believe the U.S. has evolved where team-based performance is taken for granted. You know, high-performance teams are what drive the U.S. Work experience. The belief is that collective intelligence and collaborations are very superior to individual performance. But if you really, really see deeper into business cultures in places like India, China, and even Japan, and performance appraisals are all about individual goals. In the US, performance appraisals are all about your contribution to the success of the team. It follows that people operating in a system built upon hierarchies tend to make decisions that benefit their own interest rather than the organization as a whole, right? So, you know, hierarchies also negatively impact sometimes innovation, bringing in ideas. So, which is actually very essential to a market like India, you know, India's competitiveness and ambitions. So when we handle the performance aspect of these employees, for example, their self-appraisals and, you know, their goals for the next year to come, we need to make sure they understand the business objective and then the collaboration that needs to go into the success of the team. And that would bring in a bigger change when it comes to the results and outcome of the company or as an organization. That's something I wanted to insist. When it comes to doing performance management with people from particular culture or particular region.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, at the beginning of the month in the webinar we did in week one, I made a similar point, Suresh, which is I think that even in the U.S., right, we talk a lot about collaboration, the importance of collaboration, but I actually think that in terms of how we structure our performance evaluations and sometimes even our performance goals, we're not actually delivering on that. So we're still, in a lot of cases, evaluating people on kind of personal, individual things, even though we're saying that we want people to collaborate. And so I think we need to think carefully about those goals and make it clear across cultures, right? you know, what we expect in terms of collaboration and teamwork, and especially if it's international, and then provide support for people to do that, because I think there's some training. Lisa mentioned, you know, in previous organizations, having the benefit of some good training around working cross-culturally, but I think we also need to do a better job of training about how to work on teams, as well as how to work internationally, so that we not only create that expectation, but then we help empower people to really learn how to do that really effectively. So, Lisa, any parting thoughts about international teams?
I say embrace it. You may find, you know, sometimes it's a little hard to be on a call late at night or super early in the morning, but I think the benefits far outweigh it. I think, you know, if you have that opportunity, take advantage of it. You're going to get to meet people. You're going to learn so much. It's a great opportunity. So my parting words would be to embrace it.
Great. Well, thanks so much to both of you for joining us, and I look forward to seeing some comments on the forum. Hopefully, we'd love to hear from others about your experience being on or leading international teams, some of the challenges and tips and tricks and successes that you've had. So thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.